You're listening to Clouser on Business. Thanks for coming back. I'm Clouser, your host. Glad you're with us. We're doing session two on business transitions with Frank Dane. As you may recall, Frank's a partner with B2B CFO, and we're talking about business transitions. Frank began his career at Price Waterhouse, has a master's in accounting, a Juris Doctor, and a CPA license, which is on inactive status. Frank teaches at the university level. Welcome back, Frank.
Well, thank you, Clouser. It's great to be back again.
Yeah, how does that teaching at the university work out for you? Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I just love the teaching. I love having new students come in. I teach a lot of basic courses, fundamentals of financial accounting, so I'm really getting blank slates, if you will, when it comes to accounting. And it's almost like teaching another language. So it's not an easy course, but it's lots of fun. I get to, again, see these bright faces learning new things. And I can actually see when something clicks in someone's face, which is a really rewarding experience. And because of my own experience, I'm able to bring some practicality to the course so we can take it from the theoretical level right down to the street level and what really happens.
Yeah, it's interesting. With the world getting smaller, how much does the international accounting flavor play into your teaching?
Well, because it's usually a basic course, the international doesn't play into it that much, but we do touch on the international accounting standards because, as you said, the world is getting smaller, the standards are coming closer together, and ultimately it's going to have to be not just American generally accepted accounting principles, it's going to have to take over the world international accounting standards, which is what is in process now, and actually it's been going on for many years.
Right, yeah. So on the business transition topic, has there been one engagement that has stood out in your career that you just had a lot of fun with and felt really satisfied you took something from A and got it to Z?
Yeah, let me address that from two sides. And actually, one of the engagements where I learned the most, I was not selling the business, we were acquiring the business. But it gave me the opportunity to really see things from the other side, and that helped me build up my experience and how I would help people sell their businesses. And you know, one of the things we learned is you have to start thinking early, and you have to pay attention, if you've got it in your mind, to really what kind of commitments that business is getting into. And the specific example is we were doing our due diligence and we found a couple of contracts that committed the company to something we didn't want to be committed to something that was going to be really expensive to pull off. But as part of the transaction, we couldn't get out of them. Well, we were able to knock about $1 million off the price because of those two contracts.
Wow.
So, so that's it. You really need to look at the commitments that you're getting into. On the other side, I'll give you an example of how not to at least calculate the value. I was sitting down with a gentleman, and again, he didn't plan. He wanted to be out immediately, and he took out a piece of paper and he said, here's what I want. And he said, okay, here are my expenses. Here's what I'm getting from my investments, and here's what I need. So the plug was the value of his business. And I said, well, you know, that's really not the value. You know, it could, maybe it's lower than that, but maybe it's a lot higher. You know, let's sit down and really figure it out. So that's an example of where I got a lot of experience being on the opposite side of the table and a way not to do it.
Yeah, I can tell by the expression on your face that you really enjoy doing what you're doing.
I do.
So last week we were talking about the five steps in planning for a transition. I think you had talked about the sitting down on the goals and then assembling a success team. Do you want to pick up from there and maybe recap on those first two steps?
Sure. I'll be happy to do that. So very quickly, there's five steps. Identify the goals, assemble a team of advisors, which we call the success team, explore the options, design the plan, finalize and implement the plan. Step one, identify the goals. What does the owner want to do? What's the ultimate goal that he or she wants to achieve? Is it the most money, more time? And then step two, we assemble a success team, which can be have any number of people, but you'll have an attorney, a CPA, an investment manager, financial planner, business advisor, insurance advisor, banker, key employees, family members, and team members. Team manager. And you may not have all of those individuals on every team. It depends on the size of the transaction and the complexity. The team manager, that's the position that I would hold. Now, that takes us to step three. And on step three, we're exploring what are the options? What are the types of ownership transitions that we can implement?
And can I ask you a question? Sorry. Back on that, assembling the team.
Yes.
What role do you normally have to play? Because I would doubt, I shouldn't say this, but I would doubt that most business owners do not have all those team players readily available.
Yeah, great question. To the extent that they have those players available, if they have their own CPA and a CPA that's capable of doing that, this type of transaction, because a lot of CPAs will be tax specialists. Now, we need the tax advice, but we need it in a specific area, a transition area, not a 1040 or a simple corporate return. If they have a financial planner, of course, we'd want to use them because presumably they've been working with them in the past. We'll use their banker, their attorney. If they have the person, we'll use them if they're up to the job. If not, we will help find the right person to fill in that team slot.
Okay. And then you were, I interrupted you as you were going into the valuation. How do you help your client value their business? What methods do you use?
Well, the methods that we use, there's a number of methods. There's a number of methods, and that will depend to a certain degree on the type of the ownership transition, which is step three. And if you decide that your option is to go to family members, that could be from a sale of shares. And you can gift into your family, and there's a current gift tax exclusion, which is about $14,000 per recipient per year, or a lifetime exclusion of 5.34. So the owner can start transferring the business over to their son, daughter, cousin, whoever it is that qualifies under the family, and there wouldn't be a tax on that as long as they're under the $14,000 per year. Another way to transfer to a family member are trusts. You can place the ownership shares in a qualified trust to avoid estate taxes. The owner retains control and receives income during his or her lifetime, and you reserve the ownership for your young children. And finally, you can have a family limited partnership, and under that type of arrangement, you can split the income, split the equity, control the shares. Then the next type of possible transition is a management buyout, which we call MBO, and you can have a leveraged buyout where the management team will borrow to purchase the shares. So it's leveraged. They're leveraging the transaction. Or you can do it through stock options. And in that case, the owner would sell shares back to the company, and through some type of plan, the company would offer the shares as options to the managers or to whoever else is going to participate in the buyout. And then if your key managers aren't participating in this ownership transition, you want to do something to make sure that they're not going to leave and reduce the value of the company, and that's called giving them golden handcuffs. The next type of buyout option could be not just the managers, but an employee buyout. And there's an interesting book on ESOPs by Scott Riddick. It's called An Introduction to ESOPs. And the employee stock ownership plan is the trust would purchase shares using money borrowed from the company, contribute that back to the ESOP, their tax-deductible transfers, and then the owner can elect what they call a 1042 exchange and defer the capital gains. Now, this is a highly regulated and costly to set up and maintain. So typically, you won't see that except for businesses with more than 50 people, usually your larger businesses.
And with that, is that still a popular method of doing that?
It is, but again, it's for the larger companies. Okay. It's for the larger companies. And another way to have an employee buyout, they call them employee cooperatives. And the company redeems the shares of the owner, transfers them into a co-op, which is managed by the employees, and the owner, again, can elect the 1042 exchange to defer the capital gains. And unlike the ESOP, there's fewer regulations. So this is a little easier to do than the employee stock option.
So you help your client, then you lay these out in front of them, and then between the two of you, then you choose what's going to give them the greatest amount of benefit?
Yes, that's of course part of the process, and it's the greatest amount of the benefit. It depends on timing. when they want to get it done. What is their relationship to the employees? Do they want it to go to the employees? Mm-hmm. Do they care about that, or do they want to get it to Junior, or do they want to go into the market and sell it?
Yeah, just get out from underneath it.
Total. Yeah, because at this point we're just looking at the options, which are the options that we're going to pick.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good.
And then of course there's always the initial public offering. And that means you offer the stock to the public. You put it on an exchange, the New York Stock Exchange, the American Exchange. And that's primarily used when a company needs access to capital markets to expand. And typically, it's a larger business, and they're very expensive. It's very expensive to take the company public. And it's not only the initial public offering, but then there's requirements with the Securities and Exchange Commission that you have to meet. Every quarter, you have to file your statements. They have to be reviewed, and every year you have to have an audit. So it has to be a big company with a need to get into that market and to earn money. I'm sorry, to bring money into the company through that market.
And knowing what you have, that's the best platform to do it with to bring you back. The greatest may not be the easiest, though.
Right. And of course, that precludes you giving it to the family. Of course, you can give whatever shares you maintain to the family, but now mm-hmm. you're putting it out to the public. So you're diversifying the ownership. You're losing control because now as a public company, you have a board, you have an audit committee. So you lose a lot of control in that process.
Yeah, highly regulated.
Yeah. Yes, very much.
So you go over these options with them, then what's the steps you take to determine what it is they might get out of that business?
Before I hit that question, sure. Can I touch on one more option, which is the outright sale of the business? And now that might be to a strategic buyer, and that would mean a competitor or a customer or a vendor, and quite often that's an asset sale. Sometimes it can be a stock sale. The difference is that when you sell the assets, not the company, you're maintaining the liabilities. So as the seller, you want to sell the company as an ongoing business, assets and liabilities. As the buyer, you just want the assets. So that comes into the negotiation process. And let's see. So the owner, in this instance, they may continue consulting in the transition. Again, they may not exit immediately. They might sell the entire business or part of the business. And part of the deal might be, hey, you've got to stay and help me for a year or two. You get paid, but you mm-hmm. still have to stay around. But the buyer will take over the active management. And then another, aside from a strategic buyer, you could have a financial buyer, which would be a private investor or an investment group that just says, hey, this looks like I can make some money on this. Mm-hmm. They may or may not want to be involved in the business. They may want to hire people to do it, which is why oftentimes the strategic buyout will bring you a higher price because a larger company, or even not necessarily a larger company, another company may just be taking your operation into their operation, so there's going to be economies of scale that they can achieve.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Very good. So what's the next step? We're running short again on time.
The next step is determining the realistic value. I can talk faster if you like.
No, that's fine.
Should I go on to that?
Yeah, you bet.
Okay, great. So there's a variety of methods used, and often they're used in combination so that you get more than a one-point fix. And I'll discuss a few. If you'd like a longer list or more detail, I can refer you to Middle Market M&A by Marks, Slee, Blees and Nall, N-A-L-L, and the Exit Strategy Handbook, which Clauser already mentioned. So the first and very often used is the EBITDA method. I mentioned EBITDA before, earnings before income tax, depreciation, and amortization. And the way we value based on the EBITDA solution is you take the EBITDA and you multiply it by an appropriate factor. The factor is based upon risk, growth, the industry, the type of the buyer, whether there's intellectual property, et cetera. Factors are currently, they're typically running about 2 to 3 for companies with revenues under 5 million, about 4 to 11 for revenues from 5 million to a billion, and then 12 and above for revenues of 1 billion and up. But remember, these are all generalities, and there'll be differences based upon the differences between the companies, the current economic conditions, et cetera. The next approach, we call it the market comparable approach, and based on that, you select public companies in the same or similar industry, and you use their price earnings multiples as a guide in determining the value. There's also the discounted cash flow method, which, again, is based on projecting future cash flows, but we then take them and rather than applying a multiple, we discount them back to the present value by applying a discount rate. Mm-hmm. And then we also have capitalized earnings, and this can be used in conjunction with EBITDA to help determine what the multiplier is. The theory here is that an asset, which can be just an ongoing business, is valued and it will yield a sufficient return to recover the cost and reward the investor for the risk taken. And this approach is used, it helps reflect a company's goodwill, which is the value that may not be reflected in hard assets. It could be, for example, the reputation of the company. And that usually gives you an excess above the industry norm. So you look to the industry and you try to determine a reasonable return that way. And again, another interesting factor about the value of the business, and I'm repeating myself because it is very important, is that typically the less the owner is involved in the business, the less critical he or she is to the business, the higher the value on a transition. So those are the some of the methodologies for determining the value.
All right. Hey, I'm getting that high sign again, Frank, okay. And I'm out of time. So we'll get together again and we'll wrap it up with explaining what you do with all this information, how you execute the plan and make a successful transition. Hey, well, thanks, Frank. Again, I just wanted to point out, Frank mentioned it again, the Exit Strategy Handbook. You can get a link off our website, Clouseron Business, to get that free. Appreciate you being here today. You're listening to Clouser on Business.